connect that. You know, the things are so quick. So, there have been things that are five. You were in one.
Thank you. gentlemen, please.
I'm starting with a number two. I think that today is a very important day for us, Minister. And this morning I thought, you know, I'd like to make a few opening remarks before we start with the meeting. And just remind us as members how important this department is. Because when it comes to education itself, when it comes to government, it is a key priority. And it's very important, you know, us oversighting the department today. And as we know, the mandate of the department is to provide quality education to all South Africans. And I think, Minister, when it comes to that mandate, the department is doing well. And just remind the members and officials that when it comes to the Constitution Section 55.2b, it expects us as members to exercise oversight over the National Executive Authority and to oversee the policies, legislation, and then also priorities from the State of the Nation at least 2010 to see that all of them are implemented. To help us with our oversight function, Section 92.3b of the Constitution further requires the Cabinet to provide Parliament with full regular reports on matters to be oversighted, and one of the key reports is your annual report, which should be oversighted by us as members, in which we evaluate the performance of the department over the past financial year. And the financial year that we're looking at will be 2010-2011 to ascertain its strategic direction that the department took is in line with the targets set. And I must also add that during the year, we considered quite a number of reports because we have the department in almost weekly. And a lot of the work we're doing today, the department already updated us on it. Because a lot of the work was work in progress. Because I can speak to like the workbooks we were updated on that. We were updated on CAC, so we know its preparations are taking place now and training. The department spoke to us about the infrastructure too. You were here for that. And then you spoke to us about the annual results, the annual national assessment. So there's quite a number of issues that are within the annual report that you already spoke to us about. And that's just a few. And then when it comes to this annual report, Minister, and members, it's a historic moment for you as a department, because it will be the first time that will be a standalone report since you split from education. This is the first time that you're giving us this report. And I hope that it will be a learning curve for the department and for us as members, because you learn as time goes on. And with these few introductory remarks, I welcome the Minister, the honourable members and officials of the department present, including our visitors to this meeting this afternoon. And when it comes to Roland, just give us apologies, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've received one apology of Honourable Skusana, who is attending another portfolio committee currently. He said he'll join us later. Thanks.
Thanks a lot. That will be noted. I think it will be appropriate just for us to introduce ourselves. And I'll start with the Honourable Members. And then after the Honourable Members and our staff, it will be the officials of the department. First the Minister and then the officials. Minister, you can introduce yourself and then I'll go over to the members.
Thank you very much, Chair. Andrew Motseka, the Minister for Physical Education. Thanks.
Thanks a lot. Honourable Moni?
Thank you, Chair. My name is Crosby Moni, a member of the committee. Tobe.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair. I am Nomarunga Lukina, a member of the committee.
Afternoon, everybody. I'm silent.
Just please.
Tobe. Ntopile Khanyao, a member of the committee.
Afternoon, Chairperson. Mashishi AC, member of the committee.
Committee member Walmart, Chair.
Good afternoon, Donald Smiles, member of this committee.
Merah Dikobo, Net Fund Committee.
W. Madisha, member of the committee.
We welcome you to our committee. Thank you. The officials, Luella, I don't see yet, Bandi, and then Maida.
Good afternoon. I'm Dennis Bandi, content advisor for the committee.
Afternoon. I'm Riwan Maida, researcher for the committee. Thank you.
Thank you. The officials of the department, the head of the department, DG.
Bobby Subrayan, Director General, Department of Basic Education.
Sita Mulele, CFO, Department of Basic Education. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, I'm Vivian Carlson, DDG, Strategic Planning.
Harit Kitsia, Director of Strategic Planning.
Fine.
Granville Whittle, I'm in the Office of the Director General. Honourable Suman, Acting DDG Administration.
Pastor Kranjave, Office of DG.
The next person.
Carolyn Gantilevi, Chief Director, Strategic Planning Research and Coordination.
Thank you. All right.
Randall van den Juffer, Parliamentary Liaison Officer of the Minister.
Thanks a lot. We'd like everyone on the other side to introduce themselves right at the back.
Hi, I'm Johnny Wilkinson from Equal Education.
Thank you. The following.
Catherine Schneider, Equal Education.
Dr. Christa?
Christian Fisser, Textbook Development Institute.
Thank you.
Excellent, TNG.
Very good. At the back?
Good day, Chantal Bo from the ANT Study Group on Basic Education.
Hi.
Rene Rousseau from Sign Language Education and Development.
Very good.
Cara Learning from Sign Language Education and Development, SLED.
Very interesting. I think there's one person still at the back that didn't introduce himself. Chris? Okay.
Я не знаю, пел книжку это.
Он подали. Thanks a lot for that. So each and everyone knows each other. And I think there's an important announcement that we have to make. It's for DG's birthday. Is it like that, DG? We're wishing you a very happy birthday. And that comes from the whole committee. And it seems as though we are all October babies because I'm on Friday, the 14th, yeah. Yes, so we're October babies. And I select freeze the cake. The procedure of the meeting will be as follows. The minister will just do an overview. And I'd like the members to take note that we are not discussing that overview. Because we can take the minister's overview and make it part of the DGs. And then we can ask questions. Then after the minister, we'll have the DG. And then we'll open the discussion. We'll open the report to questions. Thank you. Honourable Minister. And Shemashika.
Thank you very much, Chair. And honourable members from the committee, officials from the department. Chair, I won't have a very long overview because the DG will give a full report. I just want to make a few remarks which will be part also of the DG's report. Chair, the year that we are reporting under, the year 2010-2011, indeed was a very difficult year, but also a very exciting year. It's a year where we had the World Cup, which provided opportunities for thousands of teachers and learners through the 2010 School Adventure Campaign. It's also a year where we made significant achievements in the area of poor spending programs and improved access. Because during that year, we were able to increase the number of learners who have free education to 80% of our learners. And we also expanded our school nutrition program where we were reaching almost 10 million learners, close to 10 million, it's not exactly 10 million, in 20,000 schools. Again, Chair, we'll report that it's a year where we again managed to increase the number of learners who attended preschool programs, because that's one of our key program, Chair, because I always say to officials that education, like everything else, starts where it starts, and it starts with grade R or preschool as part of our preparatory work. But it's a year again where we're able to publish a long-term plan for the sector, which we dubbed Action Plan 2014 towards the realization of school in 2025, which paves the way for a common vision for the entire education sector, because the sector is very fragmented with provincial departments and everybody having a different vision. And we thought that a single vision will help us as a sector to pull together in one direction. And we are working very close with provinces to populate the plan with programs which enable us to move, single direction with the provinces, but also the national departments. You'll recall, Chair, it's a year also where in February we were able to conduct the annual national assessments, which couldn't be conducted as planned in 2010 because of the teacher strike that we had, so we decided to push them to February. We tested almost 6 million learners in grade 1 and 3 and 9 in approximately 19,000 schools. This, Chair, will be honest also when it presented, was not without challenges, but it also yielded very important information for us. Again, Chair, we'll report that as much as we are proud that we made lots of strides, but we continue to face challenges which we are confronting with all the vigor One of them chairing the issue of what will fall under efficiency, because what we are saying, we've made great progress in terms of access, in terms of making sure that we have children that start, there's no free food in terms of equity, but we still continue to see problems around, or challenges around efficiency, where we're experiencing high failure rates as compared to even third countries. As a country, our failure rate is quite high at 9%, whereas in third countries, it stands at 5%. So it means we almost close to double what our counterparts have in different parts of SADC. But also we will, the DG will also, I think, show you slides where one of the concerning factors is around the dropout rate, especially between grades 9 and 11, between the 16-year-olds and the 18-year-olds. It's a matter of concern that we are engaged with the provinces to try and arrest this problem. But as a sector also, we're still confronted by too many multi-grade schools. We have almost 6,000 multi-grade schools. And as you will be aware, that they also present their own challenges in terms of quality, in terms of teacher supply. And again, we have plans of how we're going to improve teaching those multi-grade schools. But also as a country, because of issues of poverty, the burden of disease, and all other factors, we have almost 2 million orphans in the system. Mean that we really have children who require special attention in terms of support. It's also a matter of concern. The other ones around infrastructure, which we say continues to be one of our major binding constraints. We still have a major backlog in terms of infrastructure, and not only absence of schools, it creates lots of problems for us, because in urban areas it creates overcrowding. In rural areas, we have inappropriate structures which our kids are confronted with. We have major problems in terms of water supply, sanitation, your libraries, your labs, your specialist rooms. So it's a major area of concern. Again, we'll report the work that we're doing around that area in terms of infrastructure, because it is a serious binding constraint in the work that we're doing. We also, as I said, from the annual national assessments, it confirmed quite a number of quality challenges that we have in the sector, because it's quite clear, because even from the annual results, so we could easily confirm that the problems that we experience in your later grades originate from the problems in your foundation phases. Because provinces which perform very well, like the Western Cape and Gauteng, which perform very well in your foundation phases, you can see that very well also with their matric results. But even when we take that down to districts, districts that performed very well with the ANA results are the same districts which are doing very well in matrix. So it's quite clear that there's a clear correlation between what is happening in the foundation phases and what is happening in matrix. So, Chair, we're placing all efforts into sustaining our gains in equity and access, because we say we are making great strides in terms of equity and access. But we are aware that we have to work very hard to improve efficiency and quality, because that's where we have lots of challenges. So our initial commitment to teachers, as we will report also on the work that we've done around our teacher development framework, on the issues of text, again, Chair, as you correctly pointed out, that we're trying to make sure that we are resourcing the sector with quality material. We'll be reporting that we're even increasing the number of workbooks in terms of phases and also in terms of subjects. We're mobilizing communities, but also the entire sector, to make sure that we use our time effectively, because again, we have evidence that some of our challenges come from the fact that just a basic thing like time is not properly utilized for us to get the outcomes that we want. So we are working with different sectors, be it parents, communities, but also the schools themselves, to make sure that we can protect the time that is allocated for our teaching. So quickly, Chair, we have finalized our curriculum and assessment policy statement. We'll report about that. We report about workbooks. We report about the ANA results. But also that we are beefing up our efforts through an oversight delivery unit, which is meant to help us to really have a value chain between national and province. Because sometimes things just fall between the cracks by the time they reach the classroom. So the delivery unit is meant to ensure that the classroom, which is our delivery side, we don't lose the chain, the value chain as we get to the classroom. We continue to work very close with higher education to improve teacher education and development. We are also we're report also on the work that we're doing under NIDU, but also we concede that we have to improve the planning to address and implement the infrastructure backlog, which is extremely urgent. And those are the things, Chair, that I think we'll be touching on, and as I say, we'll then be guided by yourselves in terms of questions from members, which we will respond to in the best of our ability. So through you, Chair, I'd like to hand over to the DG to make the presentation of the report.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. And also thanks for the thanks you've given us in this introductory remarks to the committee for the hard work they were doing. The DG, Mr. Sobrai.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson.
Just stop 1 second. I think someone's cell phone is just disturbing us. It's in order. You may continue, sir.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I think my phone may be the culprit. Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. Minister, Honourable Members, Honourable Chairperson, allow me first to introduce to you Ms. Morolekwa was acting CFO. She's recently been appointed CFO. I think the Honourable Members will join me in congratulating her on her appointment. She's acted very ably under very difficult circumstances. So we now no more have an acting CFO, but a permanently appointed CFO. Ms. Nuga Diliwe is sitting at the back there, who's lost her voice, and she joined us very recently, about a week ago. She's the chief director responsible for strategic planning in the department. Honorable Chairperson, in terms of what you just said, we welcome this opportunity to be here. We regard this meeting and this appearance as a key part of our public sector reform and accountability mechanism that this country has created, and which we're all proud of. We have to develop a strategic plan which is tabled in Parliament, and therefore it has statutory clout. We also have to table, in step with that annual strategic plan, an annual report, which again is a mechanism for oversight. And then we make this presentation as one step in that process for accountability. So we welcome that very much, and we believe that this allows the department to engage in credible planning, ensuring that budgeting is integrated, monitoring and reporting all occurs in a very seamless loop. Furthermore, Honourable Chairperson, I should clarify again for emphasis that what we are presenting on is for the period beginning 1st of April 2010 to end of March 2011. Furthermore, we're presenting on the vote of the DBE, which is the budget and mandate of the DBE. What inevitably happens in these presentations is that people have interests that either fall outside that period or that impact on the mandate of provinces. That's inevitable, and we will respond to those questions. However, one needs to emphasize that the period of review here, which is what we're presenting on, may not cover events that have subsequently happened. However, we welcome questions on that and will respond to that. Furthermore, I will speak about the role of the DBE in relation to provinces, which I hope will clarify how the strategic plan and annual report of the department needs to be read. Honourable Chairperson, in response to that, I've also circulated supplementary slides, which tries to illuminate what the Minister said and tries to just provide the background to our annual report. The main presentation is the one I'll speak to, which speaks to our strategic plan and annual report. But I thought it's important first to contextualize the presentation with these brief points. Firstly, that the DBE has a statutory function, which we're all aware of, which is to formulate policy norms and standards, and then to monitor and evaluate policy implementation and impact. This is the presentation where you have two slides on the page. Based on the system's performance over the years, it has become clear that the DBE needs to perform a more active steering role, as well as a more direct role in supporting implementation. This is what has been clear over the years since 94. It's something when we appeared before this committee last year, it was emphasized, and it's a point this minister has emphasized repeatedly since she started, that the steering role of the DBE in the sector as a whole is something that we need to focus our attention on if we're going to turn around and improve performance. Now, to do this, various mechanisms have been introduced, some of them fiscal, in terms of the conditional grants, to strengthen the steering role of national departments, especially those involved in concurrent functions like ourselves. We strengthen monitoring and evaluation by the DBE, by the National Treasury, by the Auditor General, and honorable members receive from time to time the products from these institutions which serve to assist in oversight. We also have mechanisms for clear signaling of priorities, which provinces then are expected to take up in their planning process. However, notwithstanding these innovations and institutional mechanisms, we're still sitting with the problem. This is why, at the beginning of the 2010-11 financial year, the minister introduced the action plan to 2014. Is the first ever sector plan aimed at providing more robust mechanisms for steering the system. So, Honourable Chair, it's important to see the action plan as a natural progression of this intention to exercise better steering, better oversight over the sector as a whole. Furthermore, it's important to understand how the action plan works. The action plan can't and does not seek to subvert the role of provinces. Instead, what the minister set out to do at the time was to say we need to work with and through provinces in a much more systematic way. And so what the action plan does is it sets clear, measurable, and time-bound targets for the whole sector across, so that we've got one set of targets for the entire sector. Provincial departments then develop activities to respond to these targets in terms of their conditions. However, it doesn't rest there. The DBE monitors these plans and supports the improvement through provincial visits. Systematic reports are developed. So the action plan has got the targets. It's about ensuring the system responds to accountability. It's a common set of targets. Provinces then are expected to develop plans, but the department doesn't sit back. It assesses, audits those plans to make sure they're credible. However, in addition to that, the DBE can't sit back and rely purely on the aggregation of plans developed by provinces. What the DBE also does is it implements activities to ensure that these key priorities are addressed. And it's in this context that the workbooks, ENA, the CAPS, ACD, teacher education, district improvement, learner improvement strategies, etc., have been developed. It's adding to what provinces are doing. Further refinement of policies as well is happening in terms of the action plan priorities. And here, honorable members, you will recall the presentations we've made around, for example, the appointment of principals, the negotiations in the LRC in terms of competency assessment of principals, in terms of performance agreement for principals. All of these are part of the policy mechanisms that are being introduced to address these priorities in the action. However, notwithstanding these things, we felt that, and the minister has, based on our implementation thus far in the last financial year, in fact, and as an outcome of our assessment of the last financial year, introduced a further institutional mechanism, one that's responsive to the conditions around implementation, and that is the Planning and Delivery Oversight Unit. So the Planning and Delivery Oversight Unit is an additional mechanism to ensure that the steering function of the DBE, i.e. operationalizing what it means to work with and through province, is given effect. So, Honourable Chairperson, I thought it's important to clarify that in terms of how the department's strategic plan needs to be assessed. In other words, when we read the strategic plan and the annual report, we need to ask,
does it in fact go far enough to address these functions of the DBE, considering it spends a small portion of the education budget, the basic education budget, but it has a critical steering role. Now, if you look at some of the background issues that we're trying to address, Honorable Chairperson and members, as raised by the Minister, is that over a very short period of time, from 2002 to 2009, the percentage of five-year-old children attending education institutions by province rose from 39.3% to 78.3%. That's in a period of about 7 years. And you'll see a year-on-year increase that is quite impressive. So there's been phenomenal growth there. The other thing, Honorable Chairperson, that is a matter that often is debated across, whether it's the media or in scholarly articles, is about dropouts of especially post-GET in the FET band. And you will see from these statistics, which are not the DBE statistics, these come from Stats South Africa, you will see that the percentage of 16 to 18-year-olds in who are attending an education institution has remained fairly consistent from 2002 to 2009. So 83% in 2009 of 16 to 18-year-olds were in an education institution. They may not have been at school, but they're in an education institution. So even though the grade 12 enrollments indicate a drop, that doesn't mean that that drop accounts for a dropout. Some of those learners are in an education institution. It's an important point to remember there. However, Chairperson, there are certain important challenges in the system that has affected quality. One is, well, that the Minister has emphasized, and you will see that in the way the CAPS is being introduced and some of the other mechanisms, this matter is foregrounded. It's a language question. Now, if you look at that statistic there in red, you will see that whereas close to 82% in the schooling system have as their logged English, in other words, from grade 4, they taught in the medium of English, only 16.5% have this language, English, taught to them in the foundation phase. Now, this is impacted, we believe, significantly on the performance in the foundation phase and beyond. And this is why, in terms of the CAPS, one of the major changes introduced is that English as a first additional language is taught from grade 1 to those learners who have as their lot English post grade 4. In other words, the lot of that school, the lot that the learner will be taught, is taken as a first additional language from grade 1. And that must change that statistic where, you know, if 81 have their log in a particular language, in this case it's English, we need to see in that column, the second column, a similar figure of about 82% having been taught that language in the foundation. Now, we believe this has been a major factor contributing to what the Minister described as the quality efficiency problem. I've spoken as well in these slides about our gains in access. 5-year-old enrolled, 18-year-old, 16 to 18-year-olds in the system. But if you look at this points to our quality challenge. Now, if you look at this figure here, there are other things that contribute to our quality challenge, Honorable Members. This is about large class sizes. If you look at Eastern Cape, and you look at 2008-2009, you will see that in 2009, 418 schools had a class size averaging over 60. In 2008 in the Eastern Cape, that figure was 457. If you look at it nationally in South Africa, 1,805 schools had, 1,265 had an average over 60, 1,800 over 50. In other words, anything over 40 is where we have problems. And you can see with these figures, the other factor contributing to our challenge is the large class size. Now, there are other factors, Honourable Chair, which we've reported. I'm not going to repeat here. I just want to highlight issues like learner pregnancy, orphan status in this country. The Minister has spoken about learner pregnancy quite extensively. Orphans, we have about 2 million learners who are single or double orphans in this country. Mortality, 10,600 learners passed away in the system. 3 million learners are beneficiaries of social grants. On school fees, we're doing quite well with no fee. And in terms of enrollment, we're doing very well. But look at some of these indicators here. 78% of five-year-olds attend an education institution. 100% in terms of the compulsory band, which is 99%. The 1% we believe is related to issues of poverty and issues of disability. 93% of 16-year-olds, 85% of 17-year-olds, and 72% of 18-year-olds attend. 28% don't. Of the 28% who don't, 27% of those have already completed grade 12. So it's less, it's about a third less than 28%. So those are the figures there. However, if you look at what the minister was talking about in terms of the efficiency problem, here it's presented graphically. You will see up to about grade 8, grade 9, say grade 8, we have a minimal dropout in the sector. You go to grade 9, 6.5%. You go to grade 10, 11.5%. From 10 to 11, 11.8%. The reason for this, Honorable Chair, is a quality issue. Before ENA, children would be in the system from grade 1 right up to grade 9 without any significant credible measure of their learning across the system. However, when you get to SAT, the grade 12 exam looms, and therefore you have that phenomenon of 9-10. Now, this is, again, graphically our quality issue. This is the issue which only something like ENA can address, where we assess through a standardized exam through across the system, and then grade 3, 6, 9, and 12. So that we know already in grade 3 what the extent of the problem is. If you leave the system, if we didn't introduce ENA, this kind of pattern could have continued. So when the ENA results came out, understandably, many in society were shocked about it. But what the minister indicated at the time is that we didn't expect the results to be this bad, but we didn't expect the results necessarily to be great, because we knew that there's a quality problem in the system. Unless you measure the quality problem, you're not going to deal with it. Unless you go to the doctor to diagnose your problem, you're not going to seek to address that problem. So basically, this deals with a quality issue. If you look at the grade 12 as well, you will see here a pattern that is a South African pattern, but it's also an international pattern. Whenever the number of candidates peak, the results go down. If the number of candidates come down, the results go up. Now, you know, it's logical to an extent that as the numbers go up year on year, the system is not prepared to deal with the larger numbers in terms of teachers, textbooks, etc. Also, you may have learners in the system who have not necessarily been as prepared as when you have lower numbers. So we're sitting with that pattern, which is to some extent contributing to the matric results pattern that we have. We're seeking to address that, Honourable Chairperson, to ensure that we've got a smoother enrollment. One of the reasons for that fluctuation is the age of admission policy that was changed 12 years ago, and it's playing itself through the system. The other one is when we changed from the senior certificate to the national senior certificate, we had some challenge, we had some enrollment pattern fluctuation there. The other issue now, which is good news, is learners who don't succeed come back as repeaters. So you see that pattern shaping quality. Now, notwithstanding the quality issue, Honorable Chairperson, if you look at this, you will see that our country has spent fairly generously on basic education. The gray graph on the screen there, Honorable Members, the light gray one with the blocks, gives you real expenditure per capita in the schooling system. And you'll see whereas in 2001 it was 5,200 rand real, that you take into account inflation. It rose in 2009-10 to 7,529 using 2008 rand. That's a real increase. If you look at the nominal one, it's even higher than that. Now, if you look at in this period, on the Chairperson, there were periods of serious financial stress in the global economy and our own economy. The fact that we maintain that spending pattern is laudable. But again, even though we're spending financially, we've got a quality problem firstly, but we still also have backlogs, infrastructure, textbooks, overcrowding, which I've tried to point to. So it's important to look at the balance of these factors. Again, yeah, yes, per capita expenditure. So, Honorable Chairperson, the background which I thought will just extend on the Minister's input that she presented. In terms of the annual report, Honorable Chairperson, as you've indicated, we've presented on this matter on many occasions to this committee. I'm going to highlight some of the issues here in this presentation for the purpose of this hearing. We're aware that the functions of the department were split, and as the Honorable Chair said, it's our first presentation as a fully fledged separate department. Outstanding balances on the books of the department amounted to 119 million. The portion applicable to the DBE was transferred to the books of the DBE. The DBE relocated to new premises. We had a big strike in the year under review, and we had extended schooling holidays because of the World Cup. So, Honorable Chairperson, the financial year was a fairly challenging financial year. Just setting up a new department is not an easy matter. If you look at some of the significant achievements, the action plan to 2014 towards the realization of schooling 2025 that the Minister spoke about has been a major development. It's continuing to gain traction in the sector. Already provinces are responding to the targets in the action plan in their activities. We now have a common, credible framework against which provinces have to plan, and indeed we can see improvements in the annual performance plan and the credibility of the activities. However, the DBE monitors and supports that as well. In addition, now with the planning and delivery oversight unit, we intend to improve the credibility even further, as the Minister spoke about the value chain delivering into the classroom, which is the core business of the sector. Annual assessment, as I have tried to emphasize, is a critical step in our sector. This diagnosis is vital for us to be able to plan action. The literacy and numeracy workbooks that we supplied clearly introduced not just LTSM into the school, but supported pedagogy in a manner that tried to compensate for the weaknesses of learning and teaching in the classroom. So this has been a phenomenal development. We've had phenomenal feedback on this matter as well. In terms of the CAPS, again, the CAPS was a process which sought to simplify implementation of the curriculum, reduce the burden on teachers, and clearly the feedback we're getting is very positive. We're beginning implementation next year in 2012 in the foundation phase and grade 10. In terms of LTSM, we've prepared for that in terms of the national catalogue. In terms of training of teachers, provinces are embarking on that. Some are ahead of others, but we believe all would have done their training in time. National planning framework for teachers was developed in a period under review. The CD also in a period under review was formulated post the end of this financial year, and the question that is the end of March 2011, there's been further development, and we can speak about this, but for this presentation, we're speaking about it as at the end of March 2011. In terms of no-fee schools, we amended the target of no-fee schools that was gazetted towards the end of 2010 for the 2011 academic year. That 72% of public school learners are now accommodated in the 20,000 no-fee schools in the sector. The department did a rapid assessment and remediation intervention following the grade 12 examination results in 2010 to support provinces identify challenges, struggling schools, and seek to intervene in time for the 2011 examinations. Despite the challenges, the 2010 national exam proceeded very well, and we had an improvement in the pass rate, as honorable members are aware. The department has developed two important tools to improve school governance and management, the school governing body support tool, and the annual academic performance reporting template. A total of 583,200 adult learners were reached during the 2010 period through the Kariguri Math Literacy Campaign. These learners completed their final assessments and the project continues to create short-term employment for the facility. An important project, Honorable Chair, which I'm not sure we emphasized sufficiently in our presentations in the past, is we are aware that one of our big quality challenges in the system relates to teachers, obviously. But if you break it down, the problem relates to having a suitably qualified teacher in front of every child in the system. Now, when you have a shortage of teachers, it becomes a problem. However, our problems go beyond the shortage of teachers. We have problems around the utilization of teachers. We are aware that in some provinces, we have a problem of excess educators who haven't been transferred. We are aware that in some cases, there's a science teacher who's not teaching science, and yet it's a scarce subject. It's proven to be a difficult problem over the years to solve because information has been inaccurate. In partnership with the DPSA, Department of Public Service Administration, we've embarked on a project called HR Connect, where each teacher is profiled in detail. What's their background, what's their qualifications, what's their skill set, and what are they teaching? For the first time, we'll have information across the system to make an assessment on utilization. So this is a significant development for us, which we'll be implementing in the current financial year in terms of addressing this question of utilization. You have heard the minister before, and you'll hear in the future, no doubt, speaking about teacher utilization, teacher development, but teacher utilization as a key issue for us in terms of working with and through provinces. And then we have the IQMS, which is a team that visits schools. We visited and supported 7,160 schools during this period. It's a new cadre, relatively new cadre of people, and the coverage is quite good. At the beginning of 2011, about 1,500 principals were enrolled for the advanced certificate course, and we believe training is critical. However, training on its own of principals has proven not to be sufficient. It's a necessary intervention, not a sufficient intervention. We've got to look at the appointment of principals, which the Council of Education Ministers raised very sharply. We've got to look at the accountability of principals. These issues are currently being transacted in the Education Labour Relations Council. The NIDU bill, which spells out the mandate of NIDU, was drafted. Interest in teaching has improved in terms of Funza Lushaka. Over 30,000 applications were received. 10,000 students were funded from the first year of study through the PGCE, and 1,842 qualifying at the end of 2010. Most bursaries were awarded to students specializing in the ICT phase. Targeted recruitment of students who were able to teach in an African language for the foundation and intermediate phases is required, and that's our new emphasis. We distributed additional ECD kits throughout the schooling system. 200 provincial and district officials, as well as SNC teams of all schools for hearing and visually impaired, were trained. Our policy on learner attendance was gazetted. The National School Nutrition Program provided nutritious meals to 8 million learners in the 20,000 odds quintile 1 to 3 primary and quintile 1 to 2 secondary schools in the period under review. The department published the draft strategy on HIV and AIDS 2012 to 2016, and a school health screening program was facilitated through school health weeks. The QLTC, honorable members, an important campaign. We know that social compact is critical, and the QLTC has been gaining traction. In the current financial year, recently, there's been an accord signed with NEDLAC, and that is adding further impetus to this compact. We also, in partnership with Lead South Africa and the South African Interfaith Council, launched the Bill of Responsibilities, which is and a sustained media campaign was generating interest. We continue to work in this area because we believe it's important to balance the understanding, internalization of rights with responsibility. Honourable members and chairperson, I'll now go on to the annual financial statement, allocation versus expenditure. You'll see there in administration, we spend 97%, curriculum policy support and monitoring 54%, and I'll speak about the reason for that, teacher education and human resource development 96%, planning quality assessment, monitoring and evaluation 88%, and social responsibility 99%. In total, 89% in terms of expenditure. There you will see, in terms of economic classification, compensation of employees, 93%, goods and services, 57, interest on rent, 100, transfers, 100, the transfers, I won't go into detail on those ones. Payments for capital assets, buildings, 100%, machinery and equipment, 87%, and then software, 95%. So in terms of economic classification, it was just under 90%. Program 1, now I'm going to go into the under-expenditure. And Program 1, administration, under-expenditure is mainly due to compensation of employees, due to the non-filling of vacant posts. When we had to reorganize the department, the process of reorganization required clarity in terms of the split. It required us to work out the functions of the department, engage in fairly detailed consultation on the process, bring in the DPSC, who has to approve, bring in the National Treasury, who has to approve. All those processes take time in terms of a split department, and on that basis, these posts weren't filled immediately, and that generated the savings there. In terms of curriculum policy support and monitoring, the under-expenditure is mainly due to delays in procurement processes, as well as the processing of payments in respect of the technical secondary school recap and a conditional grant for the Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga, and the Limpopo province. These are conditional grants. They must be based on the province meeting certain criteria in terms of their plan and in terms of expenditure and implementation. In these instances, there was a problem in one of those areas, and that retarded the transfer of money. In terms of the workbooks project, when the money was allocated to us, the Treasury made an assessment in the market, and that determined the allocation. However, we embarked on an in-house process to develop the workbooks, and we procured the workbooks using a manner that opened it up to the market, and as a result of competitive bidding, based on strict quality assurance mechanisms, the price of the workbooks were brought down dramatically. We produced the workbooks at about 12 rand a piece for production and distribution, whereas when the Treasury costed it in the market, they put a figure to it of about 40 some odd rand. So this is not a underspending, it's a saving, which is what government expects of departments, and this is what we in fact delivered in terms of. What we tried to do was to ask Treasury for permission to use the extra money on other activities. They agreed in principle, but we needed to ensure that all the payments to the provider for the workbooks were completed before we used the savings. Secondly, in terms of using the savings, we had to go into a supply chain procurement process. And when we tried to procure through the supply chain management process, we realized that in the time available, it wasn't possible to do it credible, and we didn't want to engage in the supply chain management process that wasn't credible, and therefore that additional funding that the Treasury said we could explore spending wasn't spent, but I emphasize that these were indeed savings and not underspending in terms of the workforce. In terms of teacher education there, 17 million underspent. It was mainly due to the following needle in terms of it being initiated and institutionalizing itself, and that's taken time for it to reach full operational activities, and then compensation of employees in terms of the IQMS, due to uncertainty about whether the project will be extended or not, we needed to freeze the post there. So that was the reason for the underspending. Planning, quality assessment, monitoring and evaluation, this is mainly due to the following. Because of the labor action, as the minister indicated last year, we felt, and in retrospect, it was well advised not to proceed with the annual national assessment. There's a risk of it being disrupted, there's a risk of assessing learners, even though we had a long period where schools weren't fully functional. So the ENA had to be postponed to the following year. And because it was February, it wasn't possible to pay for the ENA in that financial year. Therefore, it was carried over, and that is why that money wasn't spent at that time. Underspending in respect of the IMA system due largely to late invoicing as well as incomplete service delivery by the FITA. And what we have to do there is we have to pay, we can only pay once the service has been completely delivered. So that's been a problem there. So that explains the areas of savings and under expenditure, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. In terms of the AG report, we're pleased to confirm that we received an unqualified audit opinion. It was extremely difficult in a split department to generate financial statements that satisfied the scrutiny, the very exacting scrutiny of the Auditor General. And there were instances where things that were not of our doing at all were matters that were brought up in the process. But notwithstanding that, we managed to generate annual financial statements that returned an unqualified opinion from the Auditor General. In terms of the matters raised by the Auditor General, it's performance information. It's a matter we're working on. It's a matter that the action plan took very seriously. We've done a lot of work to ensure that the performance information is credible. And that our planning process is such that when we decide on the plan, we have enough time to determine the indicators and make sure we've got information for those plans, so that what we put into our strategic plan will be things that have indicators for which we can provide performance information. The continued use of Department of Education processes and procedures, again, this was a matter unavoidable when you have a split department. And under-resourcing of the internal audit unit, again here, when the department split, we took one internal audit unit and split it into two. The consequence of that was that both departments didn't have adequate capacity. We've remediated that now, but the Auditor General was speaking about that particular period. So, Honorable Chairperson, that is the presentation which responds to the strategic plan. It's based on the annual report. I've tried to indicate the role of the DBE. I've tried to provide, once again, a reminder to Honorable Members about how the priorities in the strategic plan have been derived from the challenges in the sector, how the DBE seeks to exercise its mandate of steering the system through what it does as captured in the strategic plan, as captured in the innovations and institutional mechanisms it's created. I've reported on the expanding of its budget, but I've also emphasized that the budget of the DBE is a small proportion if you look at the sector as a whole, and it's about the extent to which we can steer the sector, which will define the extent to which the DBE is successful in exercising its mandate. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
DG, I'd like to know if there's any additions or only this report to do with the floor report. Minister? Honorable Minister? Ma'am, thanks a lot. I just want to ask the members first, do you want to question the report as a whole, or do you want to go program by program? Because you get it's cross-cutting, and it will take long if we do it program by program, but I just want to hear from you. Members, can we just ask questions as our? Fine, we'll do it that way. Are there any questions? I'll start with the Honourable Jane, then I've the Honourable Mshwana, then it's Honourable Smiles, Honourable Dikobo, Medishu. Honourable Matisha, please, ne? Matisha, sorry, Honourable Member. The Honourable Makudela, and then I think Honourable Moni, and then Honourable Dina. We start with Honourable James.
Thank you very much, Chair. And I wanted to start off with two points of congratulations. First, on getting an unqualified audit, and secondly, for maximizing access to South African learners to our schooling system. So I think that's fabulous and well done. I had a question about the quality of your figures. And just to take one example, the numbers on class size, for example, one needs to know when they were taken, when they were gathered, where they were gathered at 2 points, which day of the school year were they actually collected. And then secondly, some of your numbers just are not credible. It can't be true that there are only 50,000 learners who are pregnant. How can it be 50,000? It's just not. I mean, you're rounding up, rounding down, you're guessing. Well, I mean, what's the story? How is that reported? How is that gathered? It can't be that orphan status can round over 2 million learners and so on. You probably have good answers to these questions, but it raises all kinds of questions when you have rounded figures like that. So that's about data. Question. The second question, just very quickly, is Anna clearly showed up what it did, and that's some of the results were quite fundamental to what it is one does about it. And so Anna certainly has, with all of its shortcomings, revealed what the problem is in a very important way. But the question now is, what are the interventions precisely? And when are you introducing them, at what point, and how are they targeted? If it's early learning that needs targeting, and if there are more teachers needed there, I mean, what are your plans exactly? How are you going to roll out your interventions? Clearly, this is done through the provinces, so it's a question of what your policy guidelines are. And just the third question, you speak about you measure quality in terms of the pass rate of NSC, which is fine, but that clearly is not enough. Quality has to be measured, can be measured, or ought to be measured in different ways, like the number of science and mathematics passes as a measure of quality, because the crude pass rate of NSC as a measure of quality is just too blunt an instrument to use. Thank you.
Thank you, Member. The following person, the following honourable member.
Thank you, Chairperson. Allow me to apologise. I started from another meeting for coming late in this particular one. I have a few questions. The first one is on the teacher pupil ratio, which is an issue for concern, I believe, because one would like to check if this is not having a direct impact on our matric results, because these huge classes that we are having in South Africa may not necessarily change as long as the teacher pupil ratio remains. Now, the question is, are we moving towards an era that we may have time frames as to when we can move from this particular time teacher pupil ratio, and can we come with a proposal, a reasonable proposal, before the teachers and unions out there come toying with a number to us? That's the first one. Your ICMS payments in the past, they took a long time, you know, after it was done for payment, or sometimes overlapping even to the following year. Can we be assured that now ICMS, once they are done, they are not stuck in some offices until there is money, as if it's not like budgeted for, until there is money that's not necessarily assigned anything, then it will go and pay those teachers that have taken an extra mile. Because ICMS, if well remunerated, could be a very good encouragement to educators to improve what they are doing. Your quality learning and teaching campaigns impact. Can we check if this is an assurance for improved results? Because we need to know what steps can be taken to improve the results of this country. And the quality learning teaching campaign actually should be understood as such, but I want assurance if we believe that this will yield results such that the graph will be going up, especially concerning our grade 12 results. The conditional grant provinces, the three, if it was like Eastern Cape, Limpopo, and I missed the other one, I don't understand this. I need more clarity as to why should there be disparities, only three provinces? Because in every area you may find that there is need, even if the need is not the same. You can go to the most rich province, maybe Western Cape, you find that there are people who need this, if I understood exactly what this talk is about. Your unqualified report, this unqualified opinion, usually we believe that things are okay because reports are done, but could they be a prediction for improved results in grade 12? Because we cannot continue to have unqualified reports and the results do not maybe talk to say. And finally, the pregnant or expensive learners versus, it's not written anywhere, but versus the abortion of the past.
Because learners used to abort, and now that they go to school with their pregnancies, it's like it's a concern to all of us. And I'm checking if perhaps we shouldn't be saying maybe the laws that allow these learners a right to learn even if they're expected, are making sure that we have dealt with the question of abortion, so that when each time we come and report, perhaps we need not take this as such a big issue, but maybe an issue that can be dealt with in maybe churches and other places. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Maybe I just like to echo what my colleague has said with regard to the unqualified report and the access to education. Chairperson, I would ask the generic question, and the generic question is whether department can tell the taxpayers that they have given value for money to the South African community, to the citizens of South Africa. Whether you are happy that you bought with the money that was given to you the correct basket for the education of our learners. Chairperson, then, looking at the underspending and then against the background of opportunity cost, then having read the reasons why it was underspent, we can appreciate those reasons. But then still it raises questions. What could have been done with the money that was not spent? 608 million in curriculum, in the curriculum and support program. Well, then we could have bought, if I may say that, we could have employed teachers, because curriculum delivery is happening in the classrooms, and there are reports to the evidence that things are not happening in the classrooms. Education is not taking place, so we could have invested, used that money in that area, either for more teachers or making sure that the libraries, which some of the NGOs and the groups like Equal Education are crying for day after day. So that is the opportunity cost of that underspent money, I would imagine, Chairperson. So the department need to explain in that regard. Chairperson, then, whilst I'm at the curriculum, and ENA is connected to curriculum delivery, we are still waiting for the analysis of the ENA. And it was promised, I think, that we would have received it by now, but we are still waiting. There was supposed to be a more comprehensive analysis on ENA. Chairperson, then, again, with teacher education and development, the 17 million rand underspent, 17 million. Now, you will tolerate my insistence on opportunity cost. Teachers are key to curriculum delivery. In fact, they are standing in the center of it. Now, if you do not spend 17 million rand on teachers, where we know that teachers, in spite of what the president has asked, are not in class, and they are not doing all the using all the education time that is required from them. And then we upon that we continue to underspend 17 million. Then really, Chairperson, I would have asked whether you could not have put that money, you know, maybe doing an alternative activity instead of just not spending that money. Because if I can just stretch my mind to say that you could have spent that money to get maybe assistant teachers, although it's not allowed in terms of the law. Something could have been done just to make sure that education is happening and that you don't throw away that money. So, Chairperson, thank you very much. Let me stop there.
thank you, Chairperson. My first question relates to dropout rate. And I want to zero in on the lowest level where the DG maybe say, no, maybe it's not very worrisome. Grade 1, and we say it's 1% dropout. And then we move up to grade 10. I'm sorry, grade 9, we are at 6.5, and we still think, no, it's a... And then you see that, but I want to talk about a situation where, as a country, we have what we call compulsory school-going age. And that in that context, how do I explain the 1%, which maybe may be a bit too low. But I'm saying this cohort, there shouldn't be dropout because it is compulsory. I'm talking about the 1% to the 6.5. And my understanding is that we are not including the mortality rate here because a learner who is dead has not dropped out. And unless we have confused dropout to include people who have died. And I know that there is nothing in law at the moment that can assist the department or that can assist us. I have not seen, I don't know how to put it, a parent who has ever been pinched because his or her child dropped out in that compulsory. See, and I'm saying this thing because, you see, as we go on as a country, we must break the cycle, as Chairperson, of dependence on the state. Well, this child who drops out is going to be a liability. We should be producing a community that by a certain period, because we are making our education compulsory, the only people who depend on the state will be those who are disabled. And that people in their old age will be having their own pensions elsewhere because they have attended school and that's their work. So I just want to comment there on the dropout rate at this age where we say education is attendance is compulsory. Well, the other thing is a comment, and I really think, I don't think we should be surprised. There is an inverse relationship if you are not careful. Increased access can lead to a drop in quality if we are not careful. And how does it happen? We have an increased number of children who go to school. There is no corresponding increase in classrooms. There is no corresponding increase in the number of teachers. What does it mean? Huge class size. So as we talk about this thing, I don't think it will shock us, particularly as teachers, for example, or as educationists. It's simply that if you were teaching 40 children, you had easier access to each one of them. Increased access, they become 80. What happens to the teacher? What happens to the physical facility? So we celebrate the fact that there is increased access, and we celebrate the fact that we're doing well on the at least on that MDG goal of increased access. But we should be pushing for a corresponding increase in what these children are going to need. Kenya is a classical example where the government of Mwai Kibaki said, announced You know, as from tomorrow, education is free. And children woke up in the morning, some of them barefoot, and went to school. There were no schools to receive them. It shouldn't really surprise us. The issue of the teacher framework development, we're discussing this in the other committee this morning. And there are reports that scare us, you know, and they come and go. 2005, we were saying Human Resources Research Council, question of teacher supply and demand. Of course, they talked about morale of educators, the health of our educators. And now recently, I can't remember what group that was, but you know, this group captured headlines. There is a problem. We're producing fewer teachers than the system needs. When this debate or when this discourse is there, one misses the voice of the department. Are we worried? The solution may be in the Department of Higher Education and Training, but as the beneficiary department, are we worried? And if we are, what kind of push are we doing with our sister department? IQMS, system is maturing, maybe too mature, because my understanding is that we are moving away now from IQMS to TPA. I may be mistaken. Teacher Performance Appraiser. I was at some conference somewhere during the weekend, and people are talking about advocacy for a new system. But as we move into the new system, I'm just trying to check, aren't we going to take the problems of IQMS? And I'm glad here we are seeing that teacher scores on slide number, page 10 of the slides, in the provinces, and we are seeing it's based more on credible evidence. But what do I know? What do South Africans know? I know that IQMS excludes learner performance. It does. This teacher, or in this school, where teachers have scored a 3 and a 4, the school is dysfunctional. Because there is no relationship between the teacher's performance. I'm excellent, but 0% pass. You know, the farmer is excellent, but there is no harvest. So I just need to understand that, and I know that it's a collective bargaining. But I know while it's a collective bargaining, I want to hear the voice of the department in terms of what our desire is on IQMS. Because it's related also, we were sitting in this room, Chairperson, when NIDU officials were there. And we asked them, because they were reading their mandate, and in that mandate it says their mandate does not include evaluation of the individual educator. Say, don't touch. Now, IQMS, you know, evaluate everything, but leave that part. Where are we going? Would the minister, I'm glad the minister is here, would the minister consider revising that? That mandate, because that mandate is that the mandate comes from the minister. To say, no, you must also, it may not be for financial rewards. It may not be for financial rewards, but how do we do the system? But this critical part that Honorable Smal was talking about of an educator, we won't touch that one. And I guess it's also related to the issue of the QLTC. Again, Director General, I agree with you. It's a social compact. But when we are with teacher unions, we ask them the same question. So we will ask, you know, there is your package as a department. We'll always ask you, how much are you doing these things that you said you do in the social compact? We will ask the learners when we meet them, where we meet them. You say, IQMS, tweet for it to succeed. And I've been saying, and I want to say it again, our system is collapsing. We have a prescription in our pocket. We don't want to take it. And this prescription, Honorable Chairperson, is IQMS. If we were just to do those minima that are specified, I think there would be triple improvement in our education system. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. Perhaps I need to start from what my other colleagues here have said that the department has received an unqualified report is an excellent thing. And we, of course, need to congratulate the department on that. But further take forward what Honorable Dikuba here has said on the issue of the IQMS, that Henry, can we receive the report regarding the school's number, at least, that were visited for purposes of really understanding that, yes, indeed, there has been implementation. The issue of the outcome, the follow-ups, because obviously as you go there, there will be challenges, there will be problems, etc. What has been done to ensure that the challenges which are there, the problems which are there, are dealt with? And linked to that again, what is the status of the revised teacher performance appraisal system for post levels 1 and 2 for the principals, office-based educators, the support programs which were given to the provinces, to the districts, to the schools, etc., and the issue of the resources, the finances that have been used, really, to ensure that that indeed gets implemented. Now, the second issue that I'm raising is around the new integrated plan for teacher development. Although you gave this point on the Funza Lushaka bursaries, there's not been any proper clarity. If you can take us forward so that we are able to really to understand that. I'm not going into details. I mean, if I say take us forward, the actual implementation, the finances used, etc., etc., because that does not appear in the report itself. CAPS. It has not been clarified here the actual implementation of CAPS in this instance. If yes, there has been the actual implementation, the resources that have been used, not only finances, but the actual human resources, the challenges that we are faced with, etc. Now, when you talk of the expenditure at trend, the indication is given, Madam Minister, through your chair, that 1.6 billion was given for 2006-2007 and 10.9 2010-2011. But I think it's necessary for us really, so that we then are able to make a proper follow-up to understand what has happened between 2008-2009, because that then will be able to assist us to make a proper that thing. It's not indicated there at all. And last, Chair, the issue that has been raised on the learner well-being. How much are we spending on national school nutrition programs in each province? Do we have an indication of the number of children that are on the feeding program in each province? course, the number of schools that provide that. We believe that is very important because given the problems of poverty, unemployment that we have in very many schools, I'm sorry, in very many provinces of many of the people of our country, we then, on the basis of that, can be able to say that this has got to be done, etc., etc.
Thanks, Chairperson. Just a few from me. The first would relate to the transfers that are done to associations internationally as well as continentally. This question, I think, is coming probably for the second, if not third time. In terms of the actual impact and actual benefits that we derive from these various bodies. For instance, there's a transfer to one in Malawi, which is a Guidance, Counseling and Youth Development Center for Africa. We're making these transfers. There may be nothing wrong with that. But do we derive anything from these centers and any other? I'm just citing this one as an example. But are we able to share, to think this is their mandate and this is how we're benefiting, not as a moral obligation, but as something that we actually draw something from them? Whilst on transfers, when we meet these other institutions that account to you, Minister, some of them complain about actual funding, that the transfers at times they are not able to budget and actually implement their programs because either the transfers come at the later stage, very late, and so on and so on. Just to check with the DG whether there has been improvement in that regard. It may be with regard to SAIS, it may be with regard to even Umalusi itself in terms of the funding, which was an issue between you and them as to how they should be funded to have sufficient funding so that they're able to do their job. The second issue will relate to the legal costs. In terms of the report and the various cases that you had with various persons, it actually consumed in this particular report or year under review, it actually consumed a lot of that, whereas that particular unit has to deal with legal as well as legislative services, and the other suffered. I know it's very difficult to predict how people will take you to court and so on, and how many such cases, and how long they will drag, and how much necessarily will be spent. I'm just checking whether, from where you sit in DG, you are able to look at mechanisms of either reduction or in some instances settling some of the things out of court and so on, just to ensure that the unit itself is able to do broadly what it's supposed to do and not just be spending all the money at the level of the court and not to do other things. The third will relate to, on page 47, you're reporting on the South African science language and what you have done or you were supposed to have done in 2010, that curriculum was developed or was to be developed for grade R to 12. I know you might not have gone very far to completing that job, but my interest will be in that sign language is not necessarily being recognized as, by the South African Constitution as the official language. And probably that we need to do some work in that regard so that we don't operate purely on that kind of task when, in fact, probably we should as well ensure that the Constitution of South Africa does recognize that so that even as we undertake this task, you know the actual basis. The last one, Chair, would relate to generally the media and the public out there is being fed consistently with this information that we're providing poor education. Almost week, every week when you read, everybody's like confidently they're able to rise and say, we are feeding our children with poor education and so on and so on. And at times not clarifying exactly what they're challenging within the education system. And my worry is that you don't get this response, you know, to saying, to challenging some of these mentalities that come forward, other than the fact that perhaps there may be results in terms of numeracy and all that. But all I'm arguing is that if we believe that in terms of quality, the education system or the curriculum that we're offering is of the international standards, perhaps it's the issues of provision and all that, we must be able to drive the debate to the actual level where there's challenges, or to the angle where there's a challenge, and not just allow people broadly to just talk as they please on the whole system. Like we're not doing much, we're not going anywhere, and so on. So that mentality, I think, is now widely spread, simply because consistently people are fed with that message, and we may need to react to it if we think there's something we're able to be doing correctly. Thanks, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Two questions.
Just hold on. You still comfortable, DG? That's fine. All right.
Just
Honorable Mani, let us just stop there and you keep your questions. And then, because there's still four people that would like to ask and myself. And then that we're not going to let the others have follow-ups. So the others ask their questions. Will that be in order? Because there's many questions. That's how I asked whether you were still comfortable. Because I want to break it. Honorable Minister, Moshiha.
We'll share the questions, actually. It's a pity that Member Wilmot is not here about the credibility of statistics. I mean, if you go through the report or even the presentation we made, I'm not saying we won't take accountability for statistics that we use. Where is statistics that we collected, we indicate that those are statistics? Where, for instance,